live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Last night, I thought, was really quite a night in the association. You had highs, you had lows, you had some of the best and some of the worst. Let's start with the worst, unfortunately. Let's get the bad news out of the way. Let me start with Victor Oladipo. In case you have not seen this, I don't know that you want to see this. Now, on first viewing, it does not look terrible, but I'll tell you what does. What was terrible was the immediate reaction from his teammates when he went down.
Back jumper by Victor, no good, and Ibaka there for the rebound. Length of the floor, pass, Siakam.
They're calling a foul on Victor. They're going to say he took his legs out from under. Victor's hurt. Boy, I'm looking at his kneecap. You can see it. Yeah, you can see it.
Again, if you had not seen that, you probably didn't want to see that. And if you still haven't seen that, don't go looking for that. Trust me. With the Pacers up 8 on the Raptors in the second quarter, Oladipo was chasing down a Toronto fast break. When he went down, he immediately grabbed for his leg. The worst part of it is not the injury. It's how the team's medical staff responded to the injury by immediately covering his leg with a towel. Now, I'm no doctor, but that's generally a sign that something is not right. You want to know another sign that something is not right? It's when your kneecap is not where it's supposed to be. It's when your kneecap is in a non-kneecap location. And that's what it looked like in the 100th of a second before I looked away. And sure enough, Woj tweeted last night, quote, "Preliminary exam has left Pacers with fear that Victor Oladipo has suffered a season-ending knee injury that will require surgery," league sources tell ESPN. He will undergo an MRI on Thursday. You know, I've said for years and years and years on this show, saying something sucks is not a take. But that does suck. That sucks for Oladipo, for the Pacers, for the NBA, because he has turned himself into an all-star and one of the best players in the league. He's turned the Pacers from an afterthought into a legit team. I mean, no wonder players all over the league were tweeting out their love and their prayers for him, because they've got so much respect for him, for who he is, how he plays, what he means to that team, what he means to that city, what he means to the league itself. Remember when everybody thought that Indy got worked in that Paul George trade? Well, thanks to what Oladipo has done, they did just fine. In fact, they did better than fine. And right now he might be out for the rest of the year, and that's a bad, bad deal. Honestly, you see an injury like that, and it can pretty much ruin your night. A guy who's worked that hard, worked as hard as Oladipo has to get where he is, and to see a guy like that go down like that, man, that is terrible. Terrible. So if ever there was a night where we needed James Harden to go James Harden, it was last night. Not because that was going to erase what happened to Oladipo, because it can't, nothing would, but we still needed to see something like that. And we got it. This was the storm that everybody saw coming. James Harden in Madison Square Garden. James Harden versus the New York Knicks. Now, maybe it's because it's the Mecca that brought out the best of him. Maybe it's because he was playing the Knicks, a team so bad and so weird that they could actually lose a game on a goaltending call. Maybe it was that that brought him out of him, brought it out of him. Maybe it was all the above. Either way, it happened. Either way, when we needed it, we got it. 4 assists, 5 steals, 15 rebounds, 61 points. 61, as in the number after 60, as in a career high for Harden, as in tying Kobe's record for the most points by a visiting player in MSG history. And at this point, I've got nothing new to add, right? I'm out of words. There was a time when somebody scoring 61 in a game would be a 3-hour show. By itself, it would carry the entire program. I wouldn't need a second topic. Now, Wednesday's 61 is just a 3-pointer more than what he had last Wednesday. Knicks head coach David Fizdale said before the game, quote, "I'm not really into that, let him get his stuff," end quote. You're right, except he got his. He got his, he got yours, he got mine, he got all of ours. And my man was cooking early on. 19 in the first 9 minutes before he sat down late in the first quarter.
Harden in on Ntilikina to the rim, left the scoop, good.
He had 36 at halftime, And it looked like at that point he could name his own number. 70, 80, 85, 90. It was all within reach. But he dialed it back for a little.
Harden. 45.
Holy smokes.
45. 45. And then he iced it with this.
Finally at midcourt. Bumped by Gordon. Gordon took it away. It's a steal. Here goes the beer with 5 seconds. And a left hand throw down. 61. 2 seconds left. Mounier shot block to end the game. What an ending.
That's how you punctuate something humiliating. A filthy jam from James. The only thing better than the dunk was the Rockets' Twitter account glossing him Madison Square Harden. And speaking of the Madison Square Garden crew, the fans there had no idea what to do with this guy. I mean, they alternated between cheering him for his deep bombs, booing him when he got fouled. And as Madison Square Harden said after the game, quote, they couldn't figure out what they wanted to do. But I appreciate them, though, honestly. Tonight they kept me going, and they made the game exciting for me, end quote. And so doing it at Madison Square Garden makes it more special. Obviously, it's the Mecca. As bad as that team is, and they are, it's still MSG. It's still the Mecca. No doubt about it. My only regret is that we did not get to see Melo's MSG record fall last night. Instead, Harden came up 1 point shy of tying it, 2 from breaking it. And no, I'm not interested in people saying that it's not a real 61 because the Knicks are not a real team, a real NBA team. They are. It counts. It goes into the books. It's real. So why don't we recap really quickly what it all means. A career high, a franchise high, his 21st straight game of 30 or more. 21st straight game of 30 or more, and his third game of 50 or more this month. Check that. It's his third game of 50 in the last week and a half. He had 57 against Memphis Monday, 58 against Brooklyn Wednesday, 61 last night. I mean, there's some pretty damn good players who have never scored 50 in a game, and he's done it 3 times since the Cowboys were knocked out of the playoffs. That's how short of a time span that we're talking about. That 37 he had against Philly in 3 quarters on Monday looks like a bad night, like some sort of letdown, that he didn't bother getting off the bus. He didn't show up. He only had 37. And speaking of comparisons, there really are none right now. Not for what he's doing. He's starting to move out of MJ and Kobe territory and into Stilt territory. And the numbers he's running off are in Wilt's category. Except Wilt's numbers are cartoons. He was dominating smaller teams in a different era. Harden is a guard. And he's doing it now and getting zero help. That's not an expression of speech. That's not exaggeration. My man's getting no help. Zero help. Check this stat. 261 points in his last 5 games, and none of them have been assisted. Not one. How's that even possible? I know he brings the ball up the court, but you're telling me that none of his teammates have accidentally passed him the ball so he could shoot? That they haven't done a single give and go or a single dribble handoff that set him up? I mean, it's amazing. He's actually doing it all by himself, literally, or setting up other guys to do something for themselves. So, what I'm saying is this. The guy did something special in a place that's special, and if you've got a problem with that, you've got a problem with yourself, because some of you are actually acting like this guy is somehow the worst thing in the NBA, when right now, far and away, he's the best. Greg Berhalter. Greg, it's good to have you back. How are you?
Hey, Jim, how are you?
I'm doing great. Coach, let me talk to you about this. You and I spoke shortly after you were named the national team head coach, and now you just named your 23-player roster for a pair of upcoming friendlies. So first things first, what have the last few weeks, and in particular your first camp as a national team head coach, been like?
You know, it's been much better than expected in terms of, you know, when you're planning this, you're not exactly sure how the execution's going to go. And from an execution standpoint, it's been great. I think we've been planning a lot of off-the-field activities for the guys. The training on the field has been excellent. The guys have been improving every single day. And some great camaraderie amongst the players.
All right, so I want to unpack some of that. But when you did your homework before that job, certainly you knew what you were getting into. You knew what you signed up for. Has there been anything in the early going that surprised you at all?
You know, I'm surprised how intelligent the players are and how open they are to learning. You know, we're doing video sessions where you know, they're saying, hey, coach, can you go back a couple frames here? I want to take a look at this. I mean, they're very open and have been great during this learning process.
Clones, I'm all about working smarter, not harder in 2019. That's why I'm all about Capterra. Are you still doing things the old way at work? New year, new you, right? So start the year off right by replacing that software that causes you angst and agony every single day. You know what I'm talking about. You know the one. You can find software you love that fits your business needs using Capterra.com. Capterra is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solution for your business. So join the millions of people who use Capterra each month to find the right tools for their business. Even I had to come to grips. This is not 1999. It's 2019. I've got a couple of hundred affiliates. That base is growing. I have to stay buttoned up and in contact with them, and Capterra helps me do that. You should do the same. Go to Capterra.com/Rome for free today. Find the right tools to make 2019 the year for your business. Again, Capterra.com/Rome. Capterra, Capterra.com/Rome. Capterra.com/Rome. We're talking to Greg Berhalter. So the January camp is made up of domestic players. What were you hoping to see from the players when they came together in Chula Vista?
So we outlined to the players that, you know, this is an opportunity for them to be part of the group. And we're looking at them and evaluating based on, you know, four main things. First of all, how they fit into the culture, and then how they're open to learning, how they're adapting to the playing style, and then how they compete. So those are the four major buckets that we're evaluating the players in.
All right, so when you've got those four buckets, how much of that then, when you break it down, this time right now together with the team, how much of it is about tactics and strategies? And then how much of that is just about developing relationships with the players and the players with each other?
So that's a good question, and it's a bit of both. So we have to develop the tactical side of it, but a large part of it is just getting to know these guys, know where they come from, know, you know, their experiences with the national team, you know, hear about their club situations, you know, some of their coaching experiences in terms of, you know, what coaches have affected them in a positive way, in a negative way. So it's a really, you know, intensive time of getting to know the players.
Greg Berhalter is the U.S. men's national team head coach. You've got the U.S. going up against Panama Sunday from Glendale, Arizona. Greg, one thing I thought was really interesting, you banned cell phones in the dining area. I could see why you'd be looking to do something like that in an effort to kind of develop that chemistry among the players. But in the absence of the cell phones, crossword puzzles became a really big deal. What do you make of the crossword obsession as it unfolded?
So now I have to ban crossword puzzles. That's the
problem.
We have
great.
To cut back. So now we're at two meals a day crossword. But, you know, I think it's great to hear, you know, to hear questions flying. Hey, what, you know, what's 22 down? You guys got, you know, 15 acrosses. And it's been good. The guys have been working in groups together. And you can tell the guys that are more advanced and have been doing them for a while, they're breezing through them. Other guys are just catching up and struggling. But it's been a fun way to get together and get to know each other.
All right, so every single coach I have on, and I know you're a big sports fan, you understand this, they always talk about culture. It's always about the culture. But the difference in your job is you don't have a lot of time with these guys. How much more challenging is it when you only have a limited amount of time with the guys before they go back to the regular teams when you're trying to develop that culture?
It's definitely a challenge. So that's the first thing. It is a challenge. But I think the first thing is, you know, the staff has to be very clear and has to embody, you know, the cultural values. That's first and foremost. And then we need to set aside time to do cultural things. And you know, we don't have time to get into it now, but we did some pretty cool stuff in Chula Vista that really brought the team together. And it's important that you program time, even if it means sacrificing a day on the field.
So I know you don't have a lot of time to get into it, but can you give me an example? What types of things do you do off the field that would help the team on the field?
So, you know, we, for example, and this is, you know, a movie I highly recommend, we took the guys to see Free Solo. And, you know, talking about, you know, this one climber's journey to climb El Capitan without a rope. And, you know, just incredible amount of preparation it took into it. And for the outside world, it seems really risky, but the message to the players is, listen, with preparation, you know, it mitigates the risk. And that's what we're trying to do with our playing style. You know, it may look risky to people, but if we're prepared and we can execute, you know, then we're in complete control.
Hey, Greg, I understand why you would show the team that movie. That movie is absolutely amazing. It's amazing. How did the team react to it?
They were in awe. I mean, we were talking about it for days. We had a nice session the next day. We recapped, you know, some themes from that, just about the preparation and dedication, and you know, it just hits central themes of, you know, what are you, if you want to achieve these goals, what are you willing to sacrifice? And I think that's our main takeaway from that movie.
We're talking to Greg Berhalter for a few more moments. So you've got a lot of young talent playing both domestically and internationally for the fans to be excited about. What are you hoping to see from your guys on Sunday and then the following Saturday against Costa Rica in San Jose? Is it about the results or is it about laying the foundation for the future?
Well, you know, the results are always nice. I mean, you know, let's be honest, that's our business. But what I'd like to see is that, you know, when you watch the game, you see, okay, this is, I can see what they're trying to do. This is the beginning of what they're trying to do. That's really important to us. You know, we've been working hard for these last 2.5 weeks, and it should be able to resonate with people on the field.
Greg Berhalter is my guest. Listen, you've got a number of guys on that roster, the 23-player roster, who have yet to make their debut for the United States. Looking back on your career, what do you remember about your first match as a national team player?
Oh, my gosh. It was in Saudi Arabia. And I got subbed on at halftime, and it was amazing. You know, you wait for that moment. I was in the youth national teams and came up to the youth ranks. And the moment when you're full international is really memorable. Just to be on the field and representing your country in a full international match was special for me.
Listen, I understand that the one player who does not lack experience is Michael Bradley. And I understand that in the team's failure to qualify, he took a lot of heat and a lot of criticism. As you look at that, how fair was that criticism? And what does he mean to your team right now?
Well, soccer is a collective game, and it's very hard to pin, you know, the results of a nation on one player. So I didn't really find that fair. You know, he has experience, and, you know, maybe more was expected of him, but the way I look at it is, you know, he's a guy who has experience in our group, who can help the younger players, and has quality. I mean, the first and foremost, he wouldn't be involved in this camp if he didn't have quality.
A couple of quick things. There's always that quest for a number 10, right? You had a great 10 in Columbus. Do you feel like that player does exist in the U.S. talent pool right now, or maybe do you have to adjust your style a little bit?
So I can see us adjusting a little bit, and it's not for the lack of a pure number 10. It's maybe to be more dangerous and maybe have, you know, two 10s that can share the workload and really, you know, put the team on their heels defensively. So, we're looking at all angles. You know, when we talk about young, talented players like Christian Pulisic, you know, who just got transferred to Chelsea for a huge amount, you know, we want to put him in position to succeed. That's our job as coaches, and it's not putting more pressure on him. It's not giving him more responsibility. It's just giving him the ability to influence the game, and that's what we're going to be focused on.
All right, so finally, you've got these two friendlies coming up. I understand that you may have another one coming up in March that's about to be announced. I don't want to get greedy, Greg, but might we be able to break a little news right here? Can you give everybody a sneak preview or a sense of who it might be against and where that match might take place?
Yeah, so we're going to be playing Chile in Houston in March. And, you know, when you talk about very difficult South American opponents that bring a high level of physicality and quickness and speed, you know, that's Chile. And that's going to be a great game. You know, we usually draw very well in Houston, so we're excited about that venue. And, you know, it will give our guys a chance, you know, to test ourselves against some good competition.
Are you looking to land a new job this year? Then go check out my pals at ZipRecruiter. In sports, there are smart moves, and then there are some not-so-smart moves, like calling a timeout to kill the clock and get your offense right. That's smart. But calling a timeout with no timeouts left? Now, that's not smart. The same is true when you're hiring. There are smart and not-so-smart ways, like job sites that overwhelm you with tons of the wrong resumes. That's not smart. The smart way? Letting ZipRecruiter find people with the right skills and actively inviting them to apply. It is why it's rated number one by employers in the U.S. based on Trustpilot rating of hiring sites with at least 1,000 reviews. And right now, you can try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/clones. 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 ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. I hate to say it, Saints fans, but it's over. The game is not going to be replayed. The game is not even going to be restarted from the moment where Nickell Robey-Coleman nearly decapitated Tommy Lee Lewis. It happened. It sucked. It's unfair, but it's over. Again, I understand. It's a big, big drag, and you're not going to get that taste out of your mouth anytime soon. It's horrible. But man, stop. Stop with everything. I am not interested in one member of Congress from Louisiana telling TMZ that they need to have a makeup game this Saturday. I'm also not interested in somebody else saying that Roger Goodell should come before a congressional committee. I don't know if that was a joke. I don't give a damn. I'm not interested in the governor sending a formal complaint to the league. I am not interested in the various lawsuits that have been suggested. I'm not interested in churches that are distributing penalty flags to throw during their services. If that's a joke, that's not funny. If it's not a joke, it's straight embarrassing. I'm not into eye doctors and bakeries making pub grabs. It's tired. It's lame. It's dumb. It's stupid. Seriously, I get it. It's gut-wrenching. It hurts. I understand. I understand how much it hurts to get that close to a Super Bowl and then lose. It hurts even more when you get jammed and you get robbed. But it's time to move on. Because at this point, the more complaints there are, the more wacky they become, the less sympathy people will have. In other words, to paraphrase a wise man, you're not helping them, you're hurting them. And I do not want to be talking about it on the radio, man.
Not helping kids, it's hurting them, Rome. And he shouldn't be talking about it on the radio, man.
Look, I get that losing that game is the worst. I understand that you're in a period of mourning. I understand that. I even get that there are five stages of grief and that everybody will grieve in their own way. But try and do it in a way that's not so lame. Try and do it in a way that isn't about getting your name or your company in the local news. Like, if you and your coworkers are sitting around and one employee says, hey, you know what'd be cool? You know what'd be a great way to capitalize on this blown call? You want to stop that conversation right there. Break that person off right there. Like, if I'm looking for an eye doctor and I see one who offers hilarious free eye exams because of a missed call, I'm going to move right on by. That office could have 5,000 five-star reviews on Yelp, and I'm going to roll right on by because I don't want my eye doctor, or I want my eye doctor to be better than some whack promo gag guy. Same for you bakeries. And don't get me started with the elected officials. What a bunch of bags. You know, there's always that moment in the build-up to a big game where the mayors of the respective cities get involved. And sometimes even the two governors of the states get involved. It's always some dopey bet involving local food. You know, like, I'll bet you 10 pounds of this local food that our city is known for against your 10 bottles of local beverage that your city is known for. And everybody thinks it's great. You know, like, hey, wow, that politician, he's just like me. He cares or she cares about sports. This is fun. No, it's not. I mean, it's stupid. It's tired. It's lame. It never was cool. It never worked. But the only thing worse than the mayor or the governor or the member of Congress making a bet before the game is that same mayor or governor or mayor of Congress trying to curry favor with voters by writing a formal complaint or trying to subpoena some league official to justify a bad call. Bad calls. They happen. They happen in sports. They happen in life. If you're over the age of 9, you get over it. So, Saints fans, get over it. Saints eye doctor. Saints bakery chef. Saints politician. Get over it. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying that you can do it quickly. I'm saying you can do it without being an idiot. And right now, all of this looks really idiotic.
Get used to it. Deal with it.
You got jammed. Get used to it. Deal with it. Stop acting like morons. They're not replaying that game. Kevin Weeks is my guest. Kevin, good to have you back. How are you?
Romy, I'm great, man. Great to hear you, man. It's been a while since Vegas.
You too, man. You're right.
Thanks for having me on. Appreciate
it's good to have you back. Kevin, thanks so much. All right, so All-Star Weekend, Kevin, starts tomorrow with the skills competition tomorrow night, and then you've got the game on Saturday. What is that All-Star Weekend like, and what are you looking forward to seeing the most?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's bananas. The atmosphere is always great, especially with it being out here in San Jose, too. San Jose's got great fans, an old-school arena. You know, we've got a lot of beautiful facilities around the league now. But San Jose has an older kind of intimate feeling in terms of the rink itself. They've got very passionate fans out here in NorCal that love their team. But one of the great things about our league events is that we have NHL fans from around the world that travel to come to events. So that's what's going to make it special. So it's going to be – that atmosphere will be real electric in and around the rink, downtown San Jose, et cetera. And then what I'm looking forward to is really just seeing all the different people in the game, seeing a lot of the different players. We have a lot of skilled young players in the league now. I mean, we have first-time All-Stars like Clayton Keller, who plays for the Arizona Coyotes, has won. Miro Heiskanen for the Dallas Stars, who's 19 years old. In his rookie season, he's an NHL All-Star. Thomas Chabot, the young defenseman for the Ottawa Senators, who now this is really his second full season, if you will. That's an NHL All-Star and a first-time All-Star. And for a lot of you fans in the Pacific Northwest, with Seattle just being granted the 32nd franchise, keep an eye on Vancouver's Elias Pettersson. This kid's absolutely dynamic, and he's an all-star in his first year in the league as well as a rookie, much like they had Brock Besser last year that won the accurate shooting competition. So a lot of young stars. It's going to be a lot of fun. You're going to see incredible skill and talent. So that's going to be sweet tomorrow night with the skills competition. And then today, of course, we'll have all our coverage from Media Day, live from Media Day. So it'll be a lot of fun.
Kevin Weeks doing what Kevin Weeks does, breaking it all down. Kevin, one more thought about San Jose. Let's talk about the Sharks since you're there. When you look at what Erik Karlsson and Brent Burns are doing on defense, and then when you consider what they have on offense, how impressive are the Sharks to you right now?
The Sharks are super impressive. They're a deep team. Their GM, Doug Wilson, has done an amazing job. They've always been consistent, as you know, Romy. But I think they've taken it to a different level, even compared to their team that went to the Stanley Cup against Pittsburgh 2 years ago. I feel like this Sharks team is deeper. When you've got Brent Burns that's won a Norris Trophy and you have Erik Karlsson who's won two of them, I mean, to have those two defensemen in your lineup, they're cooking with gas with their team. I love the depth that they have up front. Jumbo Joe Thornton is continuing to do what he does. He's another future Hall of Famer. They might end up having three on this team when it's all said and done, maybe four. Joe Pavelski, their captain, who plays college hockey at Wisconsin and won a national championship, he's been excellent. They just got a lot of pieces, man. Evander Kane is heated up. He looks really good. So I think the biggest challenge for the Sharks right now is Marty Jones, their goalie, who can be outstanding and who helped carry them to the Stanley Cup final. He's a little bit off of his level right now. I think he probably has two levels up to go in his game. So once he rediscovers that form consistently, look out for the Sharks. They're currently, right now at this point, they're second in the Pacific to the Calgary Flames, who've been the biggest surprise in the league. They play great hockey. Calgary's number one in the Western Conference right now. So that's, of course, they're both in the same Pacific Division. But I'm looking forward to the races here in the second half of the season, right down to game 82, the last game of the regular season.
Kevin Weeks, NHL Network analyst. We're talking about the All-Star Weekend. Kevin, what about Tampa Bay? They've got the best record in the league right now. Does that make them the team to beat, though, in your mind?
I love Tampa. Steve Yzerman did a great job there. He's no longer there as the GM. He's still there in a managerial capacity, but they're exciting to watch. That's a real dynamic team. They got a lot of skill. They, too, are loaded, you know, starting in the net with their all-star, Andrei Vasilevsky. Even in his absence, Louis Domingue played very well. They've got all the pieces. My one thing, Rolly, though, my one thing with Tampa, and we've talked about this with our boy Tony Luffman, Mike Rupp, Alex Tanguay, some of our different people on the NHL Network, some of our team. The one thing that I'm curious to see is once the playoffs come, can they win those 2-1 games? Sure, so they can shut you down. But are they willing to be physical enough? That's my one thing. You know Stanley Cup playoffs is a whole different animal. And it feels as though the rink, the regulation size of the rink is 200 by 85 feet. But in the playoffs, I always say it feels like it gets down to 150 by 50.
Right.
So I'm curious to see if they've got the jam, if they've got that physicality in them. That'll be my only thing that will, that potentially is a question mark for me. But aside from that, they are very much a Stanley Cup contender, no question.
Kevin Weeks joining us. Kevin, I got to ask you about the Islanders. I mean, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. They were seventh in the Metropolitan Division last year. They're bringing Barry Trotz in the offseason. Now they're in first in the division. How do you explain that turnaround that quickly?
I'll tell you, Romy, and I hope we have some time for this. I remember talking to Barry Trotz. We talked to Barry Trotz last year, the night they won the cup in Vegas. We spoke to him in the lobby for about an hour. This is, okay, all being told, about 2, 3 in the morning.
Right.
We're having to fly back home to Jersey. But Trotzy is one of the best coaches in all of sports, not just the NHL, but all of sports. He has the perfect balance between tactician and humanitarian, and that's what you need. And from a tactical standpoint, he believes in a defense-first system, in a team-first system. He told us a story last year about when he first got to Washington to coach the Capitals. He organized a team field trip to go to the monument, and he said, guys, we're going to take this picture as a sign for those people that have served the nation, but also as a sign of our commitment to each other, and we're coming back here when we win the Stanley Cup. 4 years later, they were able to do that. So I got goosebumps when he was telling us about that. But specifically with this Islander group, you know, it starts with Lou Lamoriello, who I had in New Jersey, who's one of the best managers in all of sport, one of the best leaders in all of sport as their general manager. You know, as an example, I was at Madison Square Garden last week. They were playing against the Rangers. Post-game, I'm down in the lobby by their locker room. They have a full post-game meal set up outside the locker room for the visiting team in Madison Square Garden. I've never seen that before in all my years playing at the Garden and or broadcasting. So that's the attention to detail is what I'm telling you, which starts with Lou, and then it filters through Coach Trotz and his staff. So he's done an amazing job, man. Every one of the players is pumped up. They're committed to playing that style. They have that structure, and they have the lowest goals against average in the league, lowest goals against in the league, and last year they were the highest. So that speaks to the transformation. It's a testament to him and the staff, Lou, and the players.
You knew it would change. You knew it would improve. But to see it change that dramatically, that quickly, is amazing. You know, Kevin, I could argue that if you want to talk about any position in sports in terms of it being unique or challenging, maybe you start a quarterback in the NFL. And I just say that maybe. But if not that, then goalie in the NHL. And you could speak to what it's like between the pipes. I mean, as a goalie, you're in the spotlight every single time you play. Other guys might have an off night. People may not notice. But if you have a bad night, everybody's going to know. When you played the game, how did you go about dealing with that pressure night to night and game to game?
That's a great question, man. You know what? It started being a kid. It really did. It started playing, you know, youth hockey back in Toronto for the Toronto Red Wings as a kid. And I remember if I would let in a bad goal, the odd bad goal, not forget my teammates, even if you're 8 years old, right? So your teammates, they would be giving you the eye roll. Like, dude, come on, really? But then some of the parents, not mine, but some of the parents in the stands, you'd see them roll their eyes and go, oh, Kev, come on. So that started as an 8-year-old, literally. And it continued, you know, all the way as I always played at the highest levels as a kid and then playing in junior hockey, same thing, and then playing pro. And it never changes. So one way that I would just deal with that is that I would always do a reset after goals, especially after I got a little bit older. I would always do a reset. I would do an affirmation to myself, hey, this is my moment. I'm the best. I'm ready to roll. This is my moment. I'm the best. I'm ready to roll. I see it. I stop it. If I could see it, I'd stop it. Just some positive self-talk, some deep breathing. And, you know, that was a way of me being able to kind of, I wouldn't say cope, but deal with that element of the game, the stressors. Deep breathing, visualization was a big part of it for me, too. The night before games, the day of games, my pregame nap, or when I get to the locker room getting dressed, out on these, and just doing a lot of mental work that you see a lot of Olympic athletes, because you know they've got every 4 years, they're bigger on mental work and mental preparation. It's something I did inherently as a kid, but I really focused on that a lot once I got to the pro level, and I feel like that helped me. And lastly, Romy, having great people around you, having a great family that's really understanding. I think for me, the best part of the irony of me being a player and then becoming the first black broadcaster in NHL history is that my parents are from Barbados. So there was no pressure. There was no inherent pressure from home that I had to play or I had to make it. My parents were just learning. My sister, they were just learning as I went along. And their love and support was extremely important. So I was very fortunate for that. But all those things kind of helped and coincided with dealing with the pressures. Because, Romy, here's the thing, right? I was just gobbling up this Patrick Mahomes kid. I love this kid. Can't get enough of him. Love his game. Love his demeanor. I mean, TB12 is the closest thing to Mike that we've probably seen, as in MJ23, as far as dominance.
Sure.
But I would tell you this. Mahomes, and watches this kid, even at the quarterback position, this is the closest, and then pitching to goalies. There's no red light that goes on if those guys throw a pick. Everybody in the building knows that they throw a pick. But there's no red light that goes on behind them. So I think being a goalie is the only sport and the only role, the only job, right, if you make a mistake or even if you don't and something gets by you, the red light goes on behind. So it's a way of keeping you humble.
Kevin Weeks, my guest. Kevin, one last thought. And the connection's not great, but I really want to ask you this. I think it's important. Sure. I want to talk to you about this. On Martin Luther King Day, the NHL Network re-aired your interview with hockey pioneer Willie O'Ree, the first black player in NHL history. What's it like for you anytime you get any chance to spend time with him?
That's a great question. I appreciate you asking. I mean, our league owes a lot to Willie, to the Jackie Robinson of our sport. And ironically, Willie met Jackie as a young boy when Willie was a young boy playing in a baseball tournament. He told me the story about how he met Jackie Robinson and how he inspired him. And after he got to the NHL, he met Jackie Robinson again. And Mr. Robinson said, "Hey, you're the kid that I met that played hockey." So it was really full circle. But I would say this, you know, I was fortunate to be able to spend a lot of time with Willie to this point, doing stuff for the league, different initiatives, hockey camps for girls and boys all across the country. And one thing that's really impressive, Romy, is two things I should say. Number one, his level of energy and passion for the sport. And number two, his level of perseverance. He persevered so much in his life to be able to overcome, you know, a lot of the racial challenges in playing a sport, especially at that time, and then being the first player, not necessarily being evaluated, you know, on the same plane, and still loving the game, still being a huge, huge supporter of the game, still being in rinks now. I was with him in that rink when we did that interview last year in Boston, and he literally had the rink, he had everybody's full captive, undivided attention that Saturday morning. And he was talking to all the parents, all the girls and boys that played, all the coaches, all the volunteers. So his passion and his perseverance are certainly are very, very exemplary. And you know what? When I see what he's done for the game and Commissioner Bettman as well and Commissioner's appreciation for what Willie means, I think that sets the tone. And sometimes we don't always have people that are on their best behavior because, as you know, sometimes people, they feel that people aren't supposed to do certain things. So you're a visible minority. You're not, quote-unquote, supposed to play hockey or you're not supposed to. And he's helped to redefine that. And by all of his work and the league's work on that, that's gone a long way. So the next time you see somebody misbehaving in an arena that says something inappropriate, you can always point back to the great Willie O'Ree and those of us that were fortunate to follow his footsteps. You can also point back to Commissioner Bettman, both of them now enshrined in the Hockey Hall of Fame. And, you know, their relentless kind of drive to help grow our sport from coast to coast and also internationally, so we can have a lot of different girls and boys here in California, in Vegas, in soon-to-be Seattle, in Wisconsin, in Michigan, that otherwise would only be streamlined and play football or play hoops or run track or play baseball. Hockey's an option for them. And the same thing for a lot of adults at the rec level. You know, I see a lot of people in New York that work in finance and work in different things that still play adult rec hockey. And back home in Jersey, too, the same thing. So we want as many people as possible to be able to enjoy our sport. We've got a great sport, and we want to share it with any and everybody that wants to be a part of it.
He is an NHL Network analyst, and again, part of the NHL Network's coverage of the All-Star Game in San Jose. You've got live editions before and after the skills competition and the All-Star Game. More than 14 years in the professional ranks. Kevin Weeks, my guest. Kevin, great to get caught up. Really appreciate it, and especially before All-Star Weekend. Great to have you back here.
Romy, thanks so much for having me on, and also thanks to all the fans that watch us on the NHL Network, man. We appreciate all you sports fans and you hockey fans. We love you. Thanks so much.
In sports, there are smart moves, and then there are some not-so-smart moves, like calling a timeout to kill the clock and get your offense right. That's smart. But calling a timeout with no timeouts left? Now, that's not smart. The same is true when you're hiring. There are smart and not-so-smart ways, like job sites that overwhelm you with tons of the wrong resumes. That's not smart. The smart way? Letting ZipRecruiter find people with the right skills and actively inviting them to apply. It is why it's rated number one by employers in the U.S. based on Trustpilot rating of hiring sites with at least 1,000 reviews. And right now, you can try it for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/clones. 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 ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Rick in Buffalo. Brother, what's going on?
Always great to be back in, Jim. And if you need someone to take care of Baffert for you, you just let me know. Now I know the AFC title game was going to be a coin flip. I just didn't think it'd be decided by a coin flip between these idiotic overtime rules and the brain-dead officiating. The NFL has about as much credibility as Mark and Hollywood Smackoff win. The only silver lining Sunday was everyone got to see what a joke Julian Edelman is. After the league bailed him out of a muff punt, he dropped a pass I could have caught, leading to what should have been a game-changing interception. That is until the refs bailed out the Patriots on a third down completion that hit the ground, and then again on a phantom roughing the passer call. How about this, Goodell? If the ball touches the ground, it isn't a catch. And if the defender doesn't touch the face mask, it isn't a penalty. These outcomes are more scripted than an episode of the WWF's Saturday Night Main Event. Instead of playing a make-believe football game on Super Bowl Sunday, they should just have an 88-man battle royal. How great would it be watching Ndamukong Suh go upside Brady's head with a metal chair? That guy's so crazy, he might just do it anyways. And one more thing about that little turd Edelman. The only T-shirt that bitch should be wearing should say, "Without Tom Brady, I'd be a waiter." Rams 41, Patriots 10. Thanks for the vine, Jim. I'm out.
Rack him. I'll be honest. I hate it when that guy ends his calls. I hate the end of a Rick in Buffalo call. I never want them to end. Brad in Corona. Brad, what's up?
Jim, how are you, dude?
Good, bud. How about you? What's going on?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm not calling to win the smoker, but I am calling to bring a little spicy heat to the show. I heard Adam Hawk call in here the other day talking about his son's circumcision, and as you know, Jim, that's pretty much my bat signal, so message received. Hawk, if you're listening right now, I do want to congratulate you, not on the birth of your son, but on one of the most dump truck employee maneuvers I've ever seen, parlaying a bout of explosive die-die into an extended maternity leave. I am proud of you for getting your son circumcised, though, Hawk. That was very out of hipster character for you. I mean, we already know 100% that you turned down the vaccinations the minute they came into the room to offer them. Jim, can you imagine these poor nurses walking into the delivery room trying to make sure Hawk's kid doesn't die of polio, and then Hawk gets all righteous and shouts him out of there and makes him leave because he's read an article online and watched a couple episodes of The Walking Dead? By the way, quick side note on the circumcision, I do want to warn you, Hawk, make sure they actually gave little Johnny the full treatment, all right? There's all these little hipster doctors out there now running around offering to do these half-rate circumcisions where they leave some hanging around the back. It's like a foreskin comb-over. Very weird, but hopefully you get the real deal here. And by the way, come back to work, Hawk. Are you lactating right now, or is there a good reason you can't do your job at this point? The kid doesn't need you, Adam, and God knows he's not going to remember any of this except for what you put up on your Twitter feed about it, which so far is a full-body picture of you where you look like what would happen if Pete Davidson lost his butthole eyes and grew a porn stash. Rome, can you call Maury Povich up and have him drop some audio to inspire Hawk to get back to work? Adam Hawk, you are not the mother. Now get your ass back to work and provide for your family, son. Romy, quick ATP here at the end. And will you actually answer this one? I feel like sometimes I hang up and you don't answer the questions after I give them. Are you cool to answer this?
Yeah, you know I will, Brad. Of course.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, bro. So I'm watching the show on DirecTV, and I don't know if Keith Arnold's been doing a lot of stress eating because he had to take over the role as your substitute EP, but does that guy have bitch tits now?
That's not a good call. No.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Yeah, Brad, I'll get right to that question. I'll jump right on that, Brad. The BIC. I guarantee that guy woke up feeling dangerous. All right, then. Let's try Vegas. Cal in Vegas. Hey, Cal, what's up?
Hey, Jim, feel free to put a golden ticket inside my smoker. I literally just dialed your number 10 times before the producer picked up the phone. I mean, where do you find these guys? Your whole crew looks like they just stumbled out of a halfway house. And who's the new guy in the corner? That kid looks like Paulie D from the Jersey Shore. Hey, what's up, little Alvy? Last time I was here, you dropped a hammer on me. That's no way to treat a smack-off legend. You guys need me back in the smack-off. Some of those callers can't hold my jock strap. Last year, you guys dusted off Jeff in Richmond and his rival, Oral from Denver. How'd that work out? In case you missed it, Oral was a no-show, and Jeff got scared and hung up the phone. Maybe those guys will feel more comfortable in the hack-off. You also invited a couple of lady clones, Mona in Knoxville and Danica from Jacksonville. Danica, they refer to you as the queen. The queen of what? The Blake Bortles fan club? Danica, the last thing you ruined was the first hour of the smack-off. Everyone knows I will show up on the biggest stage on the biggest day of the year and ball out. I'll tell you one thing I won't do is come in here and talk about my local sports scene like that loser Matt in L.A. Jim, you need to stop putting Matt's pictures up on TV because every time you do that, all the phone lines over at America's Most Wanted blow up. Matt's covered head to toe with cheap tattoos. He got those when he was in San Quentin. Last summer, Matt hung out with Kyle in Green Bay. He taught Kyle how to become a successful carjacker. And Matt has nothing better to do than call the show every day. It's because if he goes outside, his ankle bracelet will go off. Matt, you're so pathetic. You got crushed by the jaws of life from the DA show. DA, you got a lot of guts coming up in here. DA, you have the biggest set of choppers I've ever seen, you horse-tooth jackass. And thanks for the vine, Jim. And just like our special friend Jeff Passan would say, I'll see you at the, quote, SmackDown. Woo!
He did it. Has Cal ever made it to the end of a phone call? I don't think so, but he did right there. Rack him, Alvy. Alvin, you did not bring the hammer. I know that if he had called Oral one more time, you would have, though. Is Cal going to get the smoker? Let's go to Matt in L.A. quickly. Hey, Matt. What's up, dude?
Vance, the Matt. Hey, thanks for the vine. First off, congratulations are in order. The Hawk, the Mrs., the baby Hawk, a.k.a. JR Spewing, on a happy, healthy child birth. Blessings showered upon all of you. Hey, from New England to New Orleans, you're welcome. I got you hyped up like a bug-eyed Adam Gase after freshening up with Hot Rails before his introductory presser. More amped up than a rotund Boogie Cousins bogarting Lou and Sacktown's Dubage than hitting the Krispy Kremes for a midnight run. But that's not why I called, Jim. And since SoCal Jeff already took my garb, Big Easy baby cries, just shut up. Look at the scoreboard. You got jobbed. It happens to all of us. I'm going to move on to the NBA, Romy. NBA basketball. It's naptastic. I got to give props to James Harden and his Angeles National Forest beard, filling up that basket, then putting on a scoring clinic like Cro-Marty v. Little Alvy Conception Convention. I haven't seen such rugged terrain in those NBA TV Harden highlight packages since Bear Grylls was conquering a mountain with a lighter, a buck knife, and a canteen. Take it easy, J.H., because we know you can't take it easy on that Grady from Sanford and Son Beaver Dam that sprouts up on your face daily. He's going to be the NBA's first 40-40 man, pimp. 40 points a night, 45 minutes a shave. More Belly Clarkson being activated by Bag McVay for fullback duties. More cooking Jambalaya Anderson taking Bobby Chef as his plus one to the Super Bowl. Unwore Grandpa Tretch and Grandma Matilda making out in the Edmonton oil fields. Outro! Good night now!